Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi guys, quick one before we get into the episode. This episode is sponsored by Zencastr, which is the production suite that I've used from the very beginning of this podcast. And if you're interested in starting your own podcast, hang around at the end of the episode for our 30% discount referral code. Thanks.
So our podcast is called Right and Wrong.
Are these your notes? Are these your notes about what we're going to say?
Anything. Nailed it. It's a short answer.
So how many novels did you not finish?
Oh my prior? God, so many.
It was perfect. What's she talking about? This is nonsense.
Ooh, a spicy question. I love it.
This is it, guys. The big secret to getting published is you have to write a good book. You heard it here first. We're going to
Hello, and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. I'm Jamie, and joining me today is author, editor, Bookie McBookface herself, Lily Linden.
Hey, hi. Lily, welcome to the show. Hi, thank you so much for having me. What a lovely introduction.
This is by no means your first rodeo. You, in fact, have a podcast of your own.
Oh, I do. It's now quite defunct. I did it a couple of years ago, I guess. Gosh, maybe even pre-lockdown, which is very fun. Yeah, it's called Witlet. If anyone likes listening to people talking about funny books, they can go there. Wow, I haven't even been here for a minute and I'm already promoting my own podcast.
That's what it's all about, right?
But yeah, I haven't done it in a while, but... yeah, maybe now that I'm sort of post-publication, I should revive it. And it is fun, isn't it, talking to people?
It is, yeah. Especially about books and just chatting about all the publishing stuff. Mm. So it's on hiatus. It's not cancelled. You might come back to it.
Might come back to it. yeah, let's watch the space. Yeah.
But there's no schedule or anything.
There is no schedule. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's plug more of your stuff and talk about the most exciting news that your debut novel, Double Booked, now out into the world.
Yes, indeed.
Amazing. How's the launch been?
Had a lovely party, which made me feel very glamorous. Yeah. I know how rare it is to have a launch party, so I felt very sort of spoilt, and I felt like a lovely princess. I also sort of... I feel like the point of a launch is to, yes, make the author feel very nice and special, but also to get them to emotionally blackmail all of their friends into buying a copy on the day. So, it was just very funny sort of being in a room and being like, please, please, can you all buy a copy of this book? Launch was good. I think it has just been, I'm sure we'll talk about this more, but it has been weird kind of now being on the published, you know, the author side, when I'm used to having been on the editor side. So there have people sort of, I think, assume that I'm going to be more chill about the process because I have some kind of like insider knowledge. But I feel like, if anything, I don't know, I'm definitely still discovering things and surprised by the whole experience. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think based on the people I've spoken to, no matter how much you know about how it works and how many times you've sort of been in proximity to that and seen it happen, you can't really, until you've experienced yourself, you can't really know what it's like. People often say, like, the second book, that's when you're sort of more relaxed about it because you've done it once.
Well, fingers crossed.
So tell us about the book itself, Double Booked. For me and everyone listening, what is it about? What inspired you to write it?
Yeah, well, you'd think I'd have my sort of elevator pitch by now.
You're done with that. It's already out. I don't need that anymore.
I can do my essays again. Double Booked. It's a bisexual rom-com. It's about Georgina, who is a 27-year-old living in London. And she thinks she's got her life, you know, completely sorted out. She's got a steady job as a piano teacher that she hates. She's got a long-term boyfriend who she does love. And she's got a sort of schedule of repeating events in her calendar. But one day her best friend takes her to go and see this cult lesbian pop band. And Georgina, seeing them, sort of realizes a lot of things. She realizes that she misses performing and that she wishes that she was doing that again. And she also, through her, she also realizes that she might not be straight because of her huge crush on the very sexy drummer. Georgina doesn't know what to do. She doesn't want to lose her old life, but she's also feeling this draw into a new life. So she does what any sensible person would do, and she splits her life in two. She's going to be straight Gina by day and gay George by night. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, what indeed. Well, I mean, brilliant stuff. And you are, you surround yourself with funny people, and you are...
Yes, I'm very lucky.
You are known, I think, in the editing circles as working almost exclusively on funny...
That's interesting. Yeah.
As, I mean, you said we were going to come back to, and I'm immediately going to circle back to it. You have obviously been in proximity to lots of people going through these launches, going through... editing, you in your own work as an editor, you've worked on other people's books. Was it strange, having been on that side of it for so long, to sort of have your own work and then hand it over to another editor?
Definitely, yeah. I think it probably helped that my writing is quite different to the kinds of books that I was working on at the time. Yeah. So I think that there was a kind of ability to compartmentalize in some way there, which was helpful. I wasn't like working with sort of colleagues on my own book, if that makes sense. Although, you know, that would have been great for nepotism, but unfortunately I wrote something very different. Yeah. I think that, you know, for example, I think my editor, who is Laura Palmer, who's at Head of Zeus, is wonderful. And I think she's, at the launch, she sort of said something quite funny about me being the only author that has ever sort of sent through editorial notes with my with my book. So I think that there probably is a part of it where I love the editorial process sort of from both sides, and I think that certainly some kind of some writers before they're published and sort of during that process, I think, partly because publishing is just very opaque and sort of scary, and people really care about their writing, and so editors can kind of seem like these far away baddies. And I think obviously I'm biased, and I think the editors are wonderful, and sort of I really love that process. So I guess the editorial process for me was just one of the biggest joys, and the feeling of sort of talking to someone in depth about something that I'd made up was, you know, just really, really fun. And I really value all of their input. And I think, you know, they've made the book so much better through their suggestions. And also, I think having those other people involved just sort of gave me permission to, I guess, challenge myself to try and make it the best that it could be as well. I think there's only so far that you can go by yourself, because you sort of start to see the book in a certain way, or you just, you know, you just get fed up because you've been working on it by yourself for ages. And having other people looking at it, it just felt like this real, you know, reinvigoration. And that's what I'm currently experiencing with book two as well, because I am, I've just had my editorial notes for book two. So I'm sort of very excited about getting to do that again. And make it out of the pile of poo that it currently is and into something legible.
Oh, that's great. And Head of Zeus obviously picked this up. Laura chose it. When you were, you're no longer an editor with Penguin Random House, you're now at Novel, which we'll get onto later. When you were working as an editor, were you involved with the choosing of books and that kind of commissioning process?
Yeah, I was. I did commission a few books, I suppose. So I had I don't know if it's helpful, but a little potted, I guess, my career was that my first job was in publicity, actually, at Penguin. I was on something called The Scheme, which is a kind of traineeship And my first job was in the children's department in publicity. And I then went over to Transworld, which is a kind of commercial imprint as part of Penguin Random House. And then I moved over to Vintage, which is, I guess, a more kind of literary imprint division, although they do have a lot of variety as well. And it was there that I then became an editor through, you know, the various moving arounds and moving ups.
Yes.
And when I was commissioning, I only commissioned when I moved into the classics department. So I guess I think I've had probably quite, I mean, there isn't a typical trajectory in publishing at all, but I think something that was, I guess, unusual about me was that I did have quite a lot of breadth, I guess, in the kinds of things that I was working on. Whereas I think some people do specialize sort of very early and then continue to remain in that kind of, you know, genre publishing, say. So I was commissioning, yes, but I was more involved with kind of classics, which is quite a different sort of part of the industry. So I was sometimes working with commissioning kind of new writers, either because I was involved with, say, you know, reading manuscripts for other editors. There is a lot of collaboration internally. So, you know, for example, even if one editor is the person who actually kind of buys the rights to something, there will probably have been, you know, three or four other editors who read it at the same time and were giving, you know, their sort of praise in order for it to get, you know, bought and that kind of thing. So it is very team orientated. But I guess the commissioning that I was doing was slightly different. I was maybe commissioning essays to go at the front of classic books, or it was more about, say, books that had fallen out of print and buying the rights to those, or it was, say, books that were being translated into English for the first time and sort of acquiring the rights to those. So by the time that I was commissioning, I didn't have as much of that sort of, I guess, editorial input. Because the authors were dead and I wasn't going to be sort of claiming to change Jane Austen or something.
You don't want to do that.
No, you don't want to do that. So yeah, it was kind of more of the parts of my role that I really enjoyed were things like, you know, something I'm proud of, I guess, is commissioning the love letters of Virginia Woolf and Vita Sackville-West. And I guess what was different about that was I ended up sort of editing that myself. So I put the, you know, the sort of extracts, I chose those and selected them and ordered them and, you know, wrote the little introductory bits. So I suppose, yeah, it was quite an unusual, I guess, editorial experience at that stage. But I'd sort of come through all of these different various bits, which meant that I did have that experience of more in-depth editorial bits earlier on. Sorry, I've spoken for a very long time there.
So interesting. That's a whole side of editorial that I wasn't really aware of. In my mind, being a commissioning editor is you read all the submissions from the agents and you pick the ones that you think are going to. So that's really interesting to know that.
And you know, there is a part of that because, you know, for example, there are wonderful, you know, heritage or classic kind of agents. So for example, over at Curtis Brown, the wonderful Nora and Becky are sort of a real powerhouse of classic rights. So they would be sending things if something came up. So there would definitely still be that element of, you know, you're reading manuscripts and you're talking to your team about it and you take it through the acquiring process, the acquisitions process in-house. So that kind of stuff was still there. At the point that I was commissioning, there was a slightly different, I guess, relationship with the words in a way. So that's why I guess I now really enjoy being at the Novelry, where my job is not about the publishing, but it is about that really in-depth kind of editorial feedback part of the job. So yeah, I feel like I've experienced different parts of it at different times in sort of quite a fun way.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, since we're on the Novelry now.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us the sort of services and things that Novelry offers?
Yeah, so the Novelry...
It's very different. It's not a publisher in the same way.
No, exactly. It's so the Novelry is kind of creative writing workshops, essentially. It's a kind of community for writers. And there are these various different courses. But there's also, I think, something that is really cool about it is that there are the options for people to have feedback and sort of mentorship from published authors and editors.
Of which you are both.
Of which I am both, yes. I sort of have my editor hat on at the Novelry. But there are brilliant authors who do tutoring and mentoring. And what that means is, you know, one of the services, for example, that you can get is, if you're an aspiring writer, is to send through your manuscript and get, you know, detailed line-by-line feedback on your manuscript, and also then, you know, talk through all of the structural notes. So what I think is cool about that is that normally a writer wouldn't get that until post, you know, the book has been bought.
Yeah.
So normally you might get that, I guess, from your agent once you've signed with them. But if you are someone who is desperately trying to get an agent and trying to get published, you don't really have the opportunities for that kind of really detailed sort of expert feedback very often. Obviously, there are other services that do kind of manuscript assessments, but I think that, what I like about my sort of role there is being able to talk to the people whose work I've then sort of given this feedback to. It feels like a kind of potted author editor relationship, and I get to do that with sort of lots of different brilliant sort of aspiring writers. So that is a really fun part of the job for me.
Awesome. So you're a bit more connected than you might be working at a big publishing house.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, when you're an editor and you're publishing someone, the relationship is you know, brilliant and very close, but you have various different editors, you have various different writers on your list, and you will tend to work very, very closely with people at certain times in the kind of, I guess, writing schedule. So, you know, you'll speak to them a lot around edits and then around publication, but there will be big gaps in between where you don't really, you know, speak to each other. And I guess, yeah, so something that I quite like about the Novelry is that you get to sort of do just those intense bits, like, all the time.
Yeah.
Without the sort of gaps in between. I don't know. Yeah.
No, it sounds like a really nice sort of just similar. You're effectively mechanically working in a similar way, but it's a nice way to be sort of, in a closer kind of relationship with the author itself.
Yeah.
Do you mostly, the people that work with Novelry, is it mostly unagented authors?
Yeah, I guess sometimes there are people who have, you know, got an agent, or they've been published and they're working on another novel and they just want, you know, some more, I guess, structure or feedback or advice. But it tends to be people who have, you know, wanted to write a novel for ages, and then they do a course, for example, one of the like write a novel in 90 days kind of courses. Or it will be someone who has been writing for years and years, and they sort of want in-depth feedback about their work in order to sort of move it forward. So yeah, we're kind of like pre-agents in a way, I guess.
Okay, amazing. And speaking of agents, I'm aware that your book ended up in, was it a four-way auction?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. Something like every that. Author dreams
of
happening.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was really lovely, yeah.
Eventually, obviously, getting picked up by Head of Zeus. But were you signed with an agent when that was happening?
Yeah. So my agent is the lovely Helly Ogden at Janklow Nesbitt, who is currently on maternity, like everyone else in publishing. I guess I sent it out to a few agents, and I think I know it sort of sounds so sort of falsely modest now, but I think I just really didn't expect anyone to be interested in it. So I didn't think hugely. I think I wanted a sort of signal from people that was either, oh my God, Lily, this is embarrassing, please stop. Or that was like, Lily, there is something good here, but like, here's a little bit of, you know, feedback about how to sort of take this forwards.
Yeah.
And yeah, so obviously it was like flattering and I know this sounds gross, but just quite surprising when people were interested. Helly, I think Yeah, there were some wonderful people. I think part of the problem was that there were some agents who I just like wanted to be friends with. And yeah. I was like, oh, I feel like I probably shouldn't have an agent that I just really want to like go to parties with. Not that I wouldn't want to go to a party with Helly, but I think there's she sort of has more of a, she was more of an authoritative person for me. And I was like, okay. Oh, she's going to tell me off if I don't meet my deadlines. And that was what I wanted. Right, so
That's what you needed. As
exactly, yeah, exactly. Rather than, sort of someone that I desperately wanted to go and get drunk with.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, that was lovely. And then Helly gave me some great notes, and I reworked it for a few months. And then we submitted in, I don't know, something like... March, I think. So I'd signed with her at Christmas, which was again just a really dumb time for me to be sending it out, but it all worked out, so it's fine. And then we sent it out in something like March, and that was, you know, just a real weird week, because, you know, you just have no idea whether things are gonna sort of go very quickly or very slowly, and I think having seen it go both ways, or like complete variety of ways, I think I was sort of aware of how much of a lottery that whole process can be. Yeah. But I think, yeah, the loveliest part of that process was, you know, it was obviously horrifying in a lot of ways, because I didn't have much self-preservation, and I asked Helly to send me all of the rejection emails as well.
You're a masochist.
I love to hate myself. That was kind of slightly weird, but also helpful, you know, and a lot of the feedback that people were like, you know, that gave in those, even when they were saying, you know, that they weren't going to pursue it, I worked a lot of that feedback in during the editorial process when it then did go. So, you know, it was helpful, you know, horrible, but helpful.
Yes.
And it was just so exciting to speak to people. I think that was what was so lovely about it, was the people who, you know, it's a huge amount of work that editors put in to make a pitch. You know, if you as the author are lucky enough to have sort of multiple people interested, it does feel a bit like I'm the belle of the ball and people are sort of trying to, you know, get on my dance card. And that is really lovely. And speaking to people and like knowing that these are brilliant editors, and each of them having like a different take on where the book could go, like what direction they'd want to take it in, the things that they loved about it, the things that they think could be improved, was just like so cool. And really valuable, as well as just being very sort of, surreal, I think.
Yeah.
Having people, just like people saying the names of characters and being like, oh my God, these people know who these made up things are.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was really fun.
You know what's so funny is that description is, I've heard that description many times from like debut authors of this kind of like, it's just amazing to speak to someone who's like talking about my characters as if they're as real to them as they are to me, these like made up, you know, characters and places and stuff. And it's funny that you, as someone who has like worked in the industry for such a long time as an editor, and like you've done all that stuff from the other side, but it still was like you were nervous to send it to agents, you were like weren't sure how they were going to respond to it, you were still excited when the publishers were interested. Like, it's funny that you still have all that kind of joy and stuff from it.
Yeah, well, I think it's, you know, it's different when it's you, isn't it?
Like, yeah, exactly.
I will say, I think there was something funny about when I was speaking to the editors who were interested. I think I did have a bit of a, like, something at the back of my brain was being like taking tips from them about like how to do a good pitch, and like noticing what it was that like convinced me, you know, things that were really appealing, and being like, oh, they did, you know, they sent this kind of email. Ooh, I must do that in the future. So yeah, it was a good sort of insider thing to do as well.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to a couple of editors on the show, and it's often when, because a lot of editors also write their own novels, and a lot of them have said being edited by someone else was kind of weird and hard, but also taught them so much as an editor about not just like the editing process itself, but also how to speak to the author and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I just, you know, it's part of what I love about sort of working in a creative industry, I think, is that feeling that there are these other people who have great ideas. And when it's like your own ideas, there's going to be sort of like different complications there about how you respond to it. But it's always just like, just really exciting to sort of be reminded that you're working with people who you think are cool and who have like creative brains. Yeah. That's always just a real kind of pleasure and privilege of the role. Yeah.
And that everyone's an individual and has, like you were saying, every editor has their own take or their own spin on sort of the direction that they want it to go. And that goes back to what you mentioned earlier about how editors sometimes get a bad rep because people just see them as the person that sort of dismantles and sort of manhandles your beautiful creation. But I found this when I first sort of tried to get involved with publishing and things like that. I think agents have a similar thing for would-be writers where you don't see the person, you just see agent. And then if you don't see the individual personalities and the way that each of these agents sort of interacts with people and books, you sort of think of them as just gatekeepers. And I guess it's the same for editors, but you have to appreciate that every editor is different. Everyone has their own quirks, things they like, ways they operate, and they're all just trying to do their best.
Yeah, completely, like in any job. And you know, and sometimes you will get lucky and sometimes you'll get unlucky that actually there'll be someone who for whatever reason has like a different kind of approach. But yeah. I think it's helpful to be like, if someone bought your book, it's probably because it resonated with them and because they, you know, it's really difficult as an editor to acquire something. There is a huge amount of like work that happens internally in order to kind of make your case for why you should, you know, spend money on this book and spend a lot of time on this book. And so I don't know. Yeah, I think if writers sort of remember that, like, this is someone is like another human being is like putting a huge amount of themselves into this book because they love it and because they see real potential in it, hopefully that helps to sort of view that editorial process as people who are like all trying to get the same thing, which is to try and get your book to the best point it can be.
And just put it out into the world.
Yeah, 100%. I think viewing it as like, it's a helpful reminder that art is completely subjective. And so, yes, you might have like 10 people giving you feedback and each one of them might say something different. But what's helpful is to see what they are saying that is the same. To, you know, recognize that, you know, your favorite book has got a variety of reviews on Goodreads. And if you can look at your favorite book and people are giving it 1-star reviews, you know, it sort of, I think, helps to not take things as personally. I mean, I'm giving this advice out and obviously I don't, you know, take it myself. But I think, you know, if you remember that actually these things are subjective and that is a blessing and a curse, you know, because it means that if actually someone gives you feedback that you don't agree with, if you can take that feedback in good faith and to go, oh right, like I see what you're saying and this is the reason why I don't agree, that is going to be so much more helpful for everyone than just assuming that people have like your worst intentions at heart. Like, it makes no sense to think of an editor as like wanting the worst for your book. So, but that doesn't mean it's not like difficult, you know.
I think when it comes to agents, editors, for writers, it's the most important thing is about finding the right match, I think. Find the right match for the writing, for the author, for the like, you all need to be on the same wavelength, because if you go into a contract with an agent or an editor or whatever it may be, even the publisher, you know, the wider publisher, and you're at odds through the entire thing, it's not going to bode well, I think, for the production of whatever the project is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I guess it's probably just, you know, general life advice, but I feel like if you can try to get to the heart, you know, if there is sort of a conflict for it on whatever scale, to try and understand why it is that the other person is sort of saying that, whether it's, for example, that actually they're coming at it from a kind of commercial point of view and you're coming at it from a different kind of point of view, that I think is helpful for then being able to actually find whether a middle ground is helpful or whether actually, you know, you might change your mind about what the right thing to do is. You know, certainly something that was interesting with Double Booked is, you know, there aren't really very many bisexual rom-coms out there. And so there was a sort of, I guess, a bit of a feeling of people having different ideas about where it would go in the market. So for some people, viewing it as much more commercial, and for some people, viewing it as, I guess, more upmarket. And similarly, some people being like, I'd market this very much as a rom-com, and some people saying, actually, it's, you know, we wouldn't be marketing it as a rom-com, we'd be marketing it as a coming-of-age story, or you know. And I think remembering that packaging and sort of thinking about how to publish a novel is a huge part of the editor's job and the agent's job. And it's always going to be difficult, because I think when you're a writer, you sort of have this feeling almost of like that infinite potential of what your book could end up sort of looking like. In the, you know, you don't really, I don't know, I certainly didn't have this very, maybe this was silly of me being an editor, but I didn't really sort of think about, oh, what's the cover going to look like? What's this, you know, until it kind of happens.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of another important part of making that, if you are, you know, in that position where you're sort of deciding between publishers or deciding whether to accept an offer or whatever it is. I think trying to get in touch with what it is that you value about it as well, whether it's, you know, actually I'm going to go with someone who is maybe has got a smaller budget, but I really feel like they understand, you know, the sort of meaning of it in a different way, yeah. Or, you know, whatever it is that you view as your kind of value system with it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Great advice, I think, throughout life, as you said. Also, same approach with agents. I've found where, you know, if you're lucky enough to have multiple agents wanting to represent you, there's arguments to be made for, let's say you had an older experienced agent who had, you know, been doing this for years and years. Obviously there's so much weight behind that, but at the same time I think there's a great argument for a new agent who's just starting to build
that
list, because you know that they're going to fight nonstop for everything that you do and things like that.
Definitely. And you know, don't underestimate the sort of ambition as well. Exactly. of the people at the beginnings of their careers.
Yeah, the moral of the story is be open to everyone, listen to everyone and try and figure out what everyone is offering.
Yeah. And I also think that it comes before that as well, when you're thinking about who to send your book out to in the first place. That,
yeah,
I mean, obviously the kind of classic advice of, you know, don't send it out to an agent who doesn't, you know, represent books like yours. It's just a waste of time for everyone. But
yes,
I think that, you know, if you have the best, I guess, optimism for your book and where it would sort of fly, where it would sort of grow the best,
yeah,
then I think it is easier to sort of narrow down. And again, I'm sort of giving this advice out having not followed it myself. it sort of worked out well for me,
yeah.
And I my agent's great, but I think that, I guess, my advice to writers who are at that point of maybe, you know, being about to, you know, send out to agents is, I guess, to sort of try and be a bit creepy about it and sort of look up the agents, see if you kind of feel like you would resonate with this person. Look at the books that they publish, you know, see if they're on Twitter. Do you feel like they are championing other people's books in the way that you hope they'll champion yours? You know, do you really admire the people who they represent? And I think, don't, you know, it's not going to be helpful to send it out to someone who you don't sort of have any connection with at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you can sort of self-select at as early a stage as possible. And that will mean that when you are then choosing between people, you're sort of, you know, an abundance of riches, I guess.
Yes. I think generally people have much more success when they have done the research and sent their submission to a small group of agents versus just the carpet bombing of send mass emails to everybody.
Yeah, and I think you can tell, you know, when you get that email in, you know, as I've seen it where, you know, you can tell if it's a sort of template email or if it is, you know, directed at you for a reason. It helps feel excited about sending it out as well, I think, if you sort of feel like, oh my God, imagine if this agent loves me.
That's it. Well, I mean, you mentioned the cover. I think the cover's brilliant. I love
good. Thanks.
The split, the side.
I mean, it's nothing to do with me, but...
Well, yeah. Well, you inspired it, so you can take that.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
You also have a sausage dog on the front. And as someone raised in a Dachshund family...
Oh my God.
It's always a win with me.
Oh my God, yay. What's your sausage dog called?
I don't actually have one, but I grew up my whole life. We always had pairs of sausage dogs. And my mum has one, my sister has one. Yeah.
Oh my God. What are their names? I must know.
My sisters, Basil and Parsley.
Oh my God.
And my mum's is Muddle.
Oh my God. So in Double Booked, the part of the reason that there's a sausage dog on the cover is because Georgina's mum has a sausage dog called Bunny, which is short for In a Bun. and Georgina's dad, they've always had a sausage dog in the family, and the dad used to give them increasingly stupid names. it's really delightful to hear of some real life.
Oh yeah,
silly names.
Yeah. There's whole communities of sausage dog owners. It's a rabbit hole.
God, so good.
And with that, let's do the final question, which, as always, is Lily. If you were stranded on a desert island and could take a single book, which book would it be?
Well, as everyone, I've been thinking about this, and obviously I want to try and sound really smart and clever and cool in my choice. And I also want to sound as if I'm being very original. I feel like I would want to take some kind of self-help book. Mm-hmm. I would want to take something that's going to help me deal with the situation. And I think that what I would love is I'd need recommendations. I want some kind of like Buddhist manual. Okay. Ideally, I guess one that's long and one that's really good. And I think I'd want it to be a book that I haven't read before, because I'm hoping that it would then provide me with, I guess, the sort of key to enlightenment, which I can then enjoy the island before my death.
This sounds like a great hypothetical book that you've created.
Yeah. I feel like, is it cheating to say I don't know what the book is, but I'm hoping that, that maybe that the universe would sort of recommend it to me. And it would be, you know, on the plane when I crash, and that would actually be my sort of origin story to enlightenment.
Okay. I'd not envisioned you ending up there in a plane crash, but I like how you've added that little
detail. There we go. Clearly just my imagination running wild. I'm doing a whole Lost situation
What I was thinking. Yeah, with a great twist where it's purgatory the whole time.
Yeah, it was purgatory the whole time. How original. Yeah. Sorry, that was no offense to stories that end up being about purgatory. I love that stuff.
Well, I mean, it sounds amazing. You want a book which you're not sure exists to give you the answer to life, the universe and everything, is that?
Yeah, that's about it. Right?
Yeah.
And if not, then I guess, you know, Terry Pratchett.
Yes. Oh, Terry Pratchett would be mine. Which Terry Pratchett, if I could force you to pick one?
Okay, I think it would have to probably be We Three Men.
Okay.
Yeah. I love the Tiffany Aching stories. Mm. Oh, but I also love the Vimes. This is tricky. I also have never read, Shepherd's Crown, the last one in the Tiffany Aching, because have you read it? It was, one of the last ones that he wrote before he died. And I think there's an introduction about... it wasn't really finished, you know, but they published it because it was kind of in a kind of near publication state. But I think, rather superstitiously, I've got a copy of it, but I've been sort of not reading it because I sort of feel like it would, be closure on. Yeah, exactly. It would be like, oh God. But this is just, I'm just going on about Terry Pratchett now, but
I could go on about Terry Pratchett.
Oh God.
For me, it would be Small Gods.
Oh yeah. A real banger.
I love Small Gods.
I listened to that. Really recently, I listened to it as an audiobook.
Oh, how was it? Was it good narrator?
Really good. I can't remember his name now. That's bad, isn't it? Maybe I could just Google it now. Terry Pratchett. budget audiobooks. Oh yeah. Tony, come on. Tony. Yeah, Tony Robinson.
Oh, from Blackadder.
Yeah, I think he narrates them.
Yeah, yeah. I think he does almost all of the Pratchett ones, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's great.
Oh, or maybe it's Nigel. Who is the original one?
Oh, I Tony Robinson. But I tell you what, before this could go on for hours. So
yes,
I'm going to wrap this up.
I hope you'll cut that bit out. But Terry Pratchett, great. I would. I still have some that I haven't read, and I've been deliberately sort of saving them as a treat for whenever I'm in a sort of reading rut or whatever. So I guess, if I can't have this Buddhist book that doesn't exist, then one of the Terry Pratchett's that I haven't read, that would be really nice.
Similar kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Sure. They're the same thing. Yeah. They definitely teach you how to live a better life.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much, Lily, for coming on the show and sharing all of your experience, telling us about the book, Double Booked, which is out now. You can go and get it, telling us about Novelry and your experience as an editor. It's been really, really amazing chatting with you.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Jimmy. Thank you very much for having me.
You are so welcome. And for everyone listening, if you want to keep up with what Lily is doing, you can follow her on Twitter at Lily_Linden or on Instagram at
Bookie McBookface.
Yeah.
It was funny when I made it.
I think it's still funny. I saw it and I laughed out loud by myself at the computer. But to make sure you don't miss an episode of this podcast, follow us on Twitter at Right and Wrong UK or on Instagram at Right and Wrong Podcast. You can also find us on Facebook. Thanks again to Lily, and thanks to everyone listening. We'll catch you in the next episode. Thanks for hanging around until the end. If you're interested in starting your own podcast but aren't really sure what that looks like, I can't recommend Zencastr enough. It's so simple to host, record, and download your podcast with, and it even has a built-in transcription AI. It functions entirely in the internet browser, which means all your guests have to do is click on a link and they'll be brought into the conversation. If you click on the link in the description, you'll get 30% off the first 3 months. All you have to do is click on the link in the description. Thanks again for supporting the show, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.